We don't have a wait list. We always say yes. And absolutely, in the history, like that is the goal. That is what sets us apart. And because of our history, we are able to say yes. But I would say one of the biggest stressors is that, sometimes we have a wish referral that comes in and the prognosis is poor and the turnaround time is very quick. So that is a huge stressor in my life, to be completely honest, is that we always have the funding to continue that because that's what they've always done. And so we need to always be able to do that. And we don't want to be an organization that has a wait list. We don't want to have kids in waiting. Kids don't have the gift of time sometimes.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. Rachel Kuhn inherited more than a nonprofit role. She inherited a promise. Her grandmother, Ramona Fickle, founded a special wish in Columbus in 1982 because families with children facing life-threatening illness needed more than medical care. More than four decades later, Rachel and Rebecca Brown are carrying that legacy inside the Central Ohio chapter. The ceiling is that their success is creating demand faster than the organization can absorb it. Now, Rachel and Rebecca are standing inside the central leadership conflict. How do you build the structure to say yes to more families without losing the heart that made the mission matter? Rachel and Rebecca, welcome to Hitting the Ceiling. So, Rebecca, what does the public not see between a child qualifying for a wish and that joyful moment where everyone posts it online and they have this happy moment afterwards? So what happens from start to finish?
I serve as the wish director, so I do work with the families directly from start to finish. You know, we get a referral form. I review it. We do have to be in touch with the physician that they are working with on their life-threatening illness. That a lot of times means calling a lot of doctor's offices to get the paperwork back to see if they qualify or not. So that's really kind of like the first step. Now, as soon as they do qualify, I get to call the family and say, hey, they qualify for a wish. I send over our wish application. And so that just asks all the questions about their family, who's in their family. And then the big question is, what is their wish? And they get to list three wishes. And we ask for three just in case, you know, the first one doesn't work out. And sometimes that happens. And that can take a couple months, depending on how quickly, you know, things happen. If it's a situation where the wish needs to happen quickly, sometimes that can be, you know, a week's process. At that point is when we start planning and dreaming with the family on what they want. You know, a lot of 80% of our wishes are going to Disney World. But within going to Disney World, a lot of them want to go for a specific reason. They want to meet a specific character. Or they want to experience, you know, a specific something in the parks. It's more than just going to Disney World and, you know, spending a week with their family. It's creating that dream that they have in their heart. You know, we had a girl who really wanted to meet Mirabelle from Encanto, and we were able to, you know, put together a private meet and greet for them. And so throughout this process, you know, it's months and months of planning. I think what people often don't realize is we really work with the family's timeline. So if a family comes to us and the child is in treatment, you know, we hold on to their paperwork and we say, you know, after treatment's done and you guys are cleared to schedule, you know, a travel trip, then we can work with them. And I think that that's what's so beautiful about having a small organization like we do. Like, we're able to do that and we work one-on-one with the families. And then there's another side of the wish planning where sometimes things happen and we have to delay and we have to cancel a trip. We actually had that situation happen this past fall. We have a wish recipient. She's 19 now, almost 20, and she wants to customize a guitar in Bend, Oregon, which is at a very specific guitar shop out there. And so she was scheduled, all booked and ready to go last October. Unfortunately, some medical things came up and we had to cancel, and we didn't know when she was going to go back. And thankfully, and why it's on the top of my mind, is she's leaving on Wednesday to be able to go on her trip. Or no, she's leaving today. I'm so sorry. She's leaving today. So, So those are all the things that can happen. It can happen very smoothly and quickly. But also on the downside is there can be hiccups and challenges. So sometimes it takes a full year for a wish to be granted. Sometimes it can be, like I said, a few months.
Now, do you have, is there a backlog of wishes and where you have people waiting and that you just can't fulfill them?
Actually, no. We are able to say yes to every single wish. That's kind of like our kind of internal goal is like we want to never be able to turn down a wish. And that's why you were talking about earlier, just we try to keep our overhead really low so we can continue to do that. So yeah, as soon as a family comes to us who, you know, is ready to have their wish, we are able to start working on it right away. So no wait lists, no, we're too busy. Like we see the family and their needs, you know, rather quickly and we meet them.
I would love to speak on this because that sounds great, right? Like we don't have a wait list. We always say yes. And absolutely in the history, like that is the goal. That is what sets us apart. And because of our history, we are able to say yes. But I would say one of the biggest stressors is that, you know, sometimes we have a wish referral that comes in and the prognosis is poor and the turnaround time is very quick. And so that's a benefit to what we do, that we're able to pause and do things very quickly. But how unpredictable is that for our budget, for our donors? So that is a huge stressor in my life, to be completely honest, is that we always have the funding to continue that because that's what they've always done. And so we need to always be able to do that. And we don't want to be an organization that has a wait list. We don't want to have kids in waiting. Kids don't have the gift of time sometimes. For the families that we work with, they don't know. They don't, every single day is a new start. And, you know, how are they doing today? It's not, what are you doing next month? You know, so I think that's just something that we try to be very, you know, intentional about. We try to make sure that we can say yes right away. But with that comes the stress of making sure we have those funds and we have reserved funds to be able to continue to say yes. So absolutely, yes, that is our goal, to never have children waiting. Like Rebecca said, sometimes their timeline does determine when that wish happens. But in terms of the fundraising and whatnot, that's why we push. I mean, that's why we have to continue to be ahead of the referrals so that we never say no and we never make anyone wait.
You have this double-sided marketplace. On one side, you have the individuals, the families who are looking for a wish. And on the other side, you have the donors. So in other words, you've got really two target markets, if you will. You have the wish recipient and you have the donors. When does it become a thing that holds the mission back by being lean? Is it you just put in more hours? And where do you find that resistance that if you had five more people, it would be different for you?
I think when we're talking with wish families, I mean, Rebecca does an amazing job of answering the phone whenever it rings. I mean, she will take calls outside of hours, you know, but she's got four kids of her own and a family. And so we try to keep balance, but I would say that is a huge challenge for us, is that how are the two of us, as we move forward, you know, we've got a couple of folks on the brink of retirement. And so with still trying to keep things lean, are we replacing those folks or are we taking on more in our own capacity? And so when we're working with wish families, you know, it can be that they want to meet at a time or a location and it's just really challenging for us. And if we had more people, could we open up our schedule a little bit more? Sure. But I think we do a great job of being flexible in that and understanding that, you know, a lot of what we do here just gives us such perspective on our own lives and our healthy children and how blessed we are. And I think that we're able to kind of pause and say, okay, can I adjust things this week and meet with this family? They're in a situation where they can't be flexible and we can. And so as often as we're able to do that, that's what we choose to do. But I think we also look at, you know, our list of issues and our goals and everything. And it's like, if we just had a couple more people, we could be more present on social media and we could send more marketing emails and we could, you know, we would have the more time to be able to do that. But we just have to prioritize and simplify. And what is the most important thing right now? And it's 9 times out of 10, it's the wish family and making sure that what they need is taken care of. And so I think that's a huge challenge for us, is there's all these other things that need to be done, but we always prioritize the wish family and what do they need and when do they need to meet and when are they leaving for the airport? And we need to make sure that they're ready to go. And so I think that's a bit of a challenge for us, where we're just making sure that they are taken care of first and that between our limited capacity that we're able to be as flexible as possible for them.
And when you think about hiring and when you think about growth and just thinking about that, the one of those five leadership abilities of the ability to structure, what is the right and best structure for the organization that drives clarity, accountability, but it also needs to facilitate growth. I always use the analogy like a plant in a pot, right? And if you have a small pot, the plant will only grow so much. If you put it in a much bigger pot, the plant can grow and it gets unleashed because it has more capacity. But it creates a little bit of a catch-22, if you will, right? You're a little bit afraid to hire the new people because you want to stay lean, but you know that hiring the people will enable you to grow, serve more families as you go, and be able to really sustain what it is that you're doing at the level you are. Any thoughts about that?
Every week we talk about who we're going to hire next and what their skill set looks like. And, you know, the accountability chart that was introduced to us through this process has been so helpful. And I think just learning internally what our skill sets are, what we enjoy doing, and where those gaps are. And when we look to hire someone else, we want someone who's going to fill those gaps, who wants to do the things that we aren't as good at or that we don't love doing. And so, you know, we talk about that. And I think it's just, what does that timeline look like? And so when I think about what's kind of been inherited in terms of this organization, I don't know that growth has always been the goal. And I don't think that growth on a scale, we're trying to stay within ourselves. I mean, we want to master local wish granting in Ohio. That's what we want to do. We aren't here to grant 10,000 wishes a year. You know, our special things that make us unique are that we are local, that we have a relationship with our families.
When does staying lean to protect wish dollars become the thing that holds the mission back ultimately?
So I think when we try to stay too lean, we overwork our people. And that is something that we are very much in right now. And I think something that has been really interesting about this podcast and sharing our story in general is that we're in the middle of a lot of these struggles. And that's an interesting perspective, I think, for some, you know, that we haven't hit that other side yet. But I think we're experiencing a lot of these things where, you know, we're trying to keep things lean. We're trying to protect those donor dollars and be good stewards of the donations. But at what expense? You know, we don't want to overwork our people. We need to have balance. And so we also just can't hire and hire, right? We don't have endless resources. So we're trying to very carefully navigate the process of defining what that next person would look like if there is additional resources that are needed. How can we capitalize on the resources we have? How can we maximize those? But it's a fine line. I think it's a fine line to be utilizing technology. We want to use it responsibly. We want to really dig into our people and their talents and maximize every single thing out of them that we can without overworking them. And this is the nonprofit world. So we're doing this out of good intention. And that's great. But we also have a business to run. And I think historically, maybe our organization hasn't been viewed as a business. And that's been a huge shift for us. And so looking at P&L and looking at how many hours are being worked and what the staff looks like, you know, we're constantly trying to balance that. We're trying to balance staying lean, protecting donor dollars, reserving as many of those dollars for granting wishes, which is our mission, and also having the resources that we need to make it happen.
Now, do you think because you're structured as a nonprofit, and I would always joke that nonprofit doesn't mean no profit. It just simply means that the way, you know, you have your donors coming in, that's your revenue, and then you need to apply those resources to further the mission. Do you think because you're a nonprofit, people kind of take for granted the time, effort, and energy of your team? and thinking like, oh, well, it's a nonprofit. They're mission based. So they're going to work 100 hours a week and not complain or have a never ending amount of energy to go and do that. Have you seen that?
I would say there are some assumptions. I think that there are people that think we do it for fun. And again, we do it out of the goodness of our heart. We do it because we see firsthand that we are making a difference in the lives of local families. We're granting wishes that provide joy and hope for families that are in much more unfortunate circumstances than we are and that we can even comprehend. And so it is our way of giving back and our way of doing something. But at the end of the day, we're trying to run a successful business as well. And we want it to be healthy and we want it to be sustainable. And we've been around for 44 years and we don't want to go anywhere. The economy has obviously changed. And so we are trying to adapt and just stay with it. But I think doing things out of the goodness of your heart is important. You need to be passionate about your mission, but we're also running a business.
And if you think about, you know, you're building you've been around for 44 years. And if you take the mindset that you're building a 100-year company, what are some of the things that could potentially come up that would just put you out of business or that would inhibit the mission of doing what you're doing for the next 100 years?
You know, in our world, we've kind of got these two different markets that we're selling to, for lack of better words. And so we have our donors and we have our wish families, and we need both to make things happen. Stewarding relationships and keeping connections strong with our donors and sharing our mission and sharing how their gifts are impacting the work that we do, we have to be able to continue that and put energy and effort into those relationships, because if those go away, we cannot do what we do every day. On the flip side, we have to manage relationships with social workers at our local children's hospital, which is where our referrals come from. And if we don't have referrals, we don't have children to grant wishes to. And, you know, we also have to steward our wish families so that referrals come from word of mouth. And so as we look at the forecast of a special wish, I think something that we've always kind of been rooted in is relationships. And that is something that makes us very unique. And I think that hits on all levels of how we kind of market to our donors, our families, our social workers, is that building personal relationships with people is what is going to stand the test of time.
And speaking of relationships and marketing to that two-sided market that you have, you had an experience with Mr. Beast. What opportunity did that expose about being a beloved local nonprofit and under a sort of national scale pressure? What was that like? What was the experience like? And would you want more of those types of experiences?
Yeah. If you want to talk about hitting the ceiling, that was a moment that we just felt like everything was moving faster than we could keep up. And that's essentially the way they operate, right? Like that's their whole agenda. But we were approached, to be quite frank, we thought maybe they had mistaken us for someone else. And we said, are you looking for local wish granting? Because that just doesn't seem to fit the scale at which they do things. And I would say yes. Yes to, you know, do we want more of that? Do we want the exposure? Absolutely. I mean, anybody that we can share, not only a special wish, but the fact that local wish granting exists, when we can share that with someone, it's so exciting for us. You know, it's my favorite analogy of Starbucks versus the local coffee shop and how the dollars impact that business so much more when you're supporting local and people in your community. And so it was just an avenue of us getting the word out and being able to share that with a platform much bigger than anything we could do alone.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great opportunity, such exposure, and it has become really a well-known brand, and to have a support like that is just fantastic. What's it like when storytelling brings in families that are faster than donors? You know, we talked a little bit earlier that you fulfill every wish, but is there a time when there's families coming in faster than donors are coming in, and how do you manage that?
To answer the part about the timeline, so things haven't come out completely yet, so you'll have to stay tuned on how that partnership kind of comes to light and when things are aired and live. So it was super exciting, and we're still a bit in the midst of it. It's a relationship that we hope to continue, that we have really enjoyed getting to know their team and just how they do things and how they operate. And they've given us opportunities, like I said, that we just would not have otherwise. And so we hope that does continue. But the momentum and the way that it pulls our attention and the way we have to prioritize things with them is tricky because we are a lean staff. And so it's where we've really had to zero in on what are our priorities and how can we utilize what we've learned in the EOS model to maximize our capacity. You know, we are just a few people that are trying to make a huge impact, and we're given an opportunity like this, we can't turn it down. And so, not that our goal at the end of the day is to just grow, grow, grow. I mean, we want to keep our principles intact. We want to keep all of what makes a special wish special. We want to keep that. And so we're trying to grow in a way that is maintained, and that's maintained through our people and just making sure that they are in it for the right reasons, that they're doing things that they believe is making a difference and moving us forward. And so I think when the momentum comes in, it is kind of people want to be a part of it, but it's not people just opening their wallets and throwing money at you. That's not exactly how it works. And so it might open up relationships or connections that we then can steward and have them be lifelong champions of a special wish. And how can we tie them into what we're doing and show them the local impact that we're making?
Yeah. I mean, just such important work that you're doing. And it is a lot more complex than I certainly understand and how it works to create the joy that you're looking to create for those families coming in. Kind of digging into you as the leader of this organization, and your grandmother started it. And how do you kind of separate, are other family members involved in the business at all? How do you separate being the executive director from being the founder's granddaughter? They just kind of mix together.
It's really interesting that you bring this up. So yes, my grandmother started a Special Wish Foundation in 1982. And she was just a bulldog, to be honest. I mean, she worked full time. She had five children. She just felt really blessed that they were healthy, and she wanted to give back in a way that made a difference in the lives of kids. And so I'd like to say there's a little bit of her in me. You know, I think that there are some of us in the family that kind of had that Ramona in them, you know, and good or bad, that's just how we're built. And so she, you know, took Special Wish so far. I mean, there was a point where we had a chapter in Germany. I mean, it was huge. And so over the years, things ebb and flow, right? I mean, when you're an organization that's been around for that long, of course, there's going to be ups and downs. And so there came a point where it just made sense to zero in on kind of where we were founded, grassroots, who are we serving? How can we come back to controlling those relationships with our wish families and making us unique in wish granting, which is going above and beyond by little extras, by sending a wish family to the airport in a limousine. You know, most people have never ridden in a limousine, but these kids get surprised and the limo picks them up at their house. And it's just one little extra that we do. And so we've tried to really maintain. And so my mom is retiring this year after about 30 years at a Special Wish Foundation. So I think when I came on 3 years ago, it was kind of like, we need help. We need to hire people. And so what I've learned, especially working with Brian Little, our EOS implementer, is that the answer is not always hiring more people, especially in a nonprofit. When you're trying to keep things tight, you're trying to utilize and maximize the people that are working for you, you can't just keep hiring if it's not specifically solving an issue that you have. So you've got to be very diligent. And so I came in and I'm thinking, we just need more people. We just need to hire more help. There's not enough manpower here to get this done. And so we're living in that right now, that we have longtime team members like my mom who are approaching retirement. And we're also looking to the future of a special wish. And so this is a really tricky situation to navigate. And we've realized that it doesn't always make sense to just replace somebody who's leaving. And so I've come in, and then maybe the original thought was that I just replace her. And so, but times are different. Times are different than when my grandmother started this. They probably were simpler then, and then they've gotten more complicated. And so now we're trying to simplify again, because we just kind of need to go back to the beginning. The easy thing to do would be just fill these positions and just whatever we've always done. And so something I've really tried to embrace is that we don't have to do things just because that's how they've always been done. And that's been a really tough conversation internally. And so, you know, it's, we've been challenged to just stop and ask questions. And how can we specifically fill roles? How can we, you know, replace people that are leaving after all this time and do things differently and have these difficult conversations with people that we care about so much? And so it's just been about reflecting. It's been about seeing the future of a special wish and where we want to go, and honestly, just having those difficult conversations. And so, yes, to answer that, we've had a few family members here and there, but it's really been the ones that have had those leadership abilities that have taken special wish through the generations.
When you think about your 10-year target, when you think about your 3-year picture, what is your 10-year target? What is your 3-year picture? And the people management and going to the next level, getting all the right people in the right seats to where you want to go. Is there anything else that comes to mind that is holding the business back? And the reason I'm asking you to kind of tie it to your 10-year target, where do you want to go 10 short years from now? And then if we break that down, then to think about that 3-year picture. And specifically then, if you can think about number of wishes, whatever, however you're measuring that 3-year picture, what's the right and best structure in terms of the number of seats? What are the roles and responsibilities? How many people? I think that creates a good structure for you to think about. Okay, well, in order to accomplish what I need in 3 years from now, well, now I need, you know, 6 people that look like this or that. Mm-hmm. But of course, they share our core values, but this is what they need to be able to do.
Yeah, so we've really broken down, as we've defined our 3-year and 10-year goals and pictures, you know, we've really defined what those seats look like. And so I do say that we have spent months really looking at our accountability chart, because we were a bit starting from scratch, because that wasn't an approach that had been taken before my time. And so, and I say before my time, really before we were introduced to EOS. So it wasn't my idea by any stretch, but as that was introduced to me, I'm thinking this makes perfect sense. And so we have taken days, I mean, full days, hours, weeks, and months to really dive into what those roles look like. And we've realized that we have been trying to do everything. And I think just because you can do something doesn't mean you should be the one doing it. And that's a tough lesson for people who like control. And so letting go of some of that, it's hard. I mean, I think that has been a trait of every leader at a special wish, is just we like control. And so learning to really embrace your people and being able to delegate things to them, but you have to delegate them so clearly so that they know their expectations. And so as we look 3 years down the road, we have another wish granter, because we are at $500,000 annually and we're granting 50 wishes. And so that's going to require more than the manpower that we have right now. But we just want to be so intentional with where everyone sits and who is in those seats. And so as we look 10 years down the road, you know, that's, we're at $1 million and 100 wishes a year. And so we probably have 5 people in those seats, and people that are able to help us on that donor side and the relationship building side, along with our stewarding our wish families and our social workers, and just making all of that marry together.
So how do people get in? If people listening to this podcast, how do they get in touch with you? How do they participate? How can they help?
I appreciate you asking. So our website is aspecialwishfoundation.org. That is kind of our central hub of where you can learn about our story. You can learn about how we started. You can see our logo with the 5 stick people that are my grandmother's children, and just kind of tie everything together of, you know, our grassroots beginnings and kind of where we're headed, families that we have served, the areas of Ohio that we serve, and there are ways to get involved. I mean, you can refer a WISH child that's in need. You can volunteer your time, talent, and treasure to be a part of our mission. You can donate. And there are multiple ways through the website to kind of find ways to be involved, ways to connect with us. We are a phone call or an email away. We rely heavily on volunteers and people willing to do things out of the goodness of their heart and wanting to make a difference in the lives of local WISH families.
Beautiful. And just spreading joy to people who need it most.
Spreading joy, providing special memories for families that maybe otherwise wouldn't have the resources to, and just giving them a break. These families live in hospitals and they have doctor's appointments every day and they spend time away from their siblings. And so if we can just provide a moment for them to just be together and forget about all of that, that's what we're here for.
Awesome. Well, Rachel, I love your story and keep up the good work. The world needs it. And we appreciate you being on.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
If this conversation gave you something to think about, I'd love to keep that going. I write a newsletter called Clarity Break Thoughts, where I share simple ideas, questions, and reminders to help you step back, think clearly, and lead with more intention. You can subscribe at eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts. Again, that's eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts.